Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday morning wake up call on this 7th of May 2011. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for this special edition of the Saturday morning wake up call, this 90 minute edition, as we discuss the world of sports. A lot to do. Of course, you have everything with the NBA playoffs, the Kentucky Derbies, which we will have our buddy Alex Brown on coming up in the program to talk about that, all the baseball. And, of course, Pac-Man against Sugar Shane later on tonight. So a lot to do, but we begin with the end of the Los Angeles Lakers. Los Angeles Lakers, of course, fell again to the Dallas Mavericks 98-92. They're now in that hole that no team in NBA history has ever climbed out of, 3-0. No team in NBA history has ever climbed out of it. It's been done in hockey 3 times, recently as last year with the Flyers and Bruins. Bruins took care of that this year. It's been done, of course, you remember, with the Red Sox and Yankees in baseball in 2004. But in basketball, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in basketball because, you know, you're up 3-0, then you, yeah, that, I mean, teams check out at being down 3-0. They don't have any sense of belief that they can come back and win 4 straight games. But to me, you know, you look at this series, it hasn't been your atypical 3-0 series. You know, normally 3-0, you say, man, this team is just so much better than this team. Yeah, it's not even funny. They're dominating, they're killing them, and, you know, they don't belong on the same court. This has not been the case. And that, to me, as a Laker fan, has to be the most frustrating thing. 2 of these 3 games, Lakers outplayed Dallas for the majority of the game. Games 1 and 3. Game two, Dallas goes out there and basically from start to finish, you know, hung with the Lakers and again pulled away late in that fourth quarter. So I mean, Dallas certainly deserve to win game 2. They deserve to win all 3 of these games because in the fourth quarter, they have dominated the Lakers. I mean, last night, entering the fourth quarter, midway to the fourth quarter, you're a Laker fan. You're feeling pretty good. You're like, okay, we're up 5, we're up 7. We're controlling the pace. Yes, Dirk Nowitzki is getting his, but, you know, we're dominating on the inside. Odom's having a good game. Bynum's having a good game. Kobe's facilitating. We are in pretty good shape. But then, you know, you have to, and this is where, you know, this year has just been crazy in the playoffs. Then Paul Gasol, you know, Paul Gasol, Kobe Bryant, you know, lack of communication. You have guys leaving Pedro Stojakovic and Dirk Nowitzki wide open for 3-point shots. Jason Terry's open for a 3-point shot. And there you go. I mean, the Lakers just fell apart defensively. And they've done that constantly throughout the course of the fourth quarter of this series. Again, this series has been decided. All 3 games in this series has been decided in the fourth quarter. I mean, even game two, Lakers were within striking distance going to the fourth quarter, down by, I think, 6 points. And next thing you know, they go from being down by 6 to being down by 15. And what does that tell you? That tells you that a team that has played now 76 games in the last three, four postseasons, they're probably on their last leg as far as this particular, I would say, this particular group. The thing I love about the NBA is the history of it, and that, you know, you cannot go away from the history of the NBA. Things have a tendency to repeat themselves. People say, well, what's wrong with the Lakers? How could this be happening? This thing, we've seen this kind of thing before. You don't believe me? 91 Pistons swept by the Chicago Bulls after winning back-to-back championships in 88 and 89. 96 Houston Rockets after winning back-to-back championships in 94 and 95. 89 Lakers. '89 Lakers swept by the Detroit Pistons in 1990. 4-0. This kind of thing has happened before. This is nothing unusual. This is nothing new in terms of NBA history. Championship teams go down. They don't go down 7 games, 6 games. They go down hard when they're at the end of a particular run, or when they're physically shot. And this Laker team is physically shot. I mean, that's all there is to it. They play a lot of 76 games in a 4-year period in terms of the playoffs. That's a lot of basketball. They're playing anywhere from, you know, 90 to 100 games a year for basically 3 straight years. You know, they're over there some a couple of spots. They go down hard. They don't go down easy. They go down hard. And this Laker team is no different. Now, the difference between this Laker team and, say, those teams that I just gave you, I believe that this Laker team does have some championships or championship left in them. You know, Gasol holding them in their primes. Kobe Bryant still at a high level. A young emerging star, Andrew Bynum. So they still have – they're not the 87 Celtics. They're not the 91 Pistons. Those teams were completely done. No, they're not quite there yet. I mean, the last time a team made it to 4 straight NBA Finals, you got to go back to the 80s with the Boston Celtics. Even the Lakers of the 80s with Magic Johnson never made it to four straight NBA Finals. Very hard to do. And it does not happen. There's a reason why it doesn't happen. Also saw another thing. I also saw an article ESPN had yesterday. I'm sure it's still on there. You know, when you step back and you look at this Laker team and you try to put them against the teams that have three-peated. Only 5 teams in the history of the NBA have three-peated. You had the Bulls doing it twice, 91 through 93. 96 to 98. You had the Lakers, of course, who were the last team to do it, with the Shaq and Kobe era, 2002. Then, of course, you had the Celtics and the Minneapolis Lakers with George Mikan and Bill Russell. Those 5 teams are all-time great teams, period. They're all-time great teams as a collection. Is this Lakers team an all-time great team when you look at it? I don't think so. I mean, I think that they belong in the categories of those Pistons, you know, Houston Rockets. I wouldn't even put them in the category with the Lakers and that repeated in the 80s with Magic. They're not in that category. But I would say they're on par with those 80, with the 95, 94 Rockets, with the, you know, 89, 90 Pistons. Maybe 90 is good, but on that level, they're not an all-time great team. This is a team that has been cheating, you know, has been going through the motions for the last couple of years. So we'll play now, we'll wait to the postseason, we'll turn it on, we'll turn it off, you know, we'll lose a home game, come back and recover. They've been kind of going through the motions, and not to say that has came back to bite them this year. That has nothing to do with that. There's no switch. They're just getting outplayed right now, and they're just a tired basketball team. But they're not, you know, you're trying to make the history. Well, you're trying to three-peat. You have to be, to me, I rank those teams as three as five of the great teams in NBA history as far as what they did, what they were trying to accomplish. This Lakers team is not on that level. They're not. Again, the most baffling part is, though, there are two parts of this. The most baffling part is, I'll say the one thing that you look at and that has to drive you nuts as a Laker fan is what has happened to Pau Gasol. Because Pau Gasol plays average basketball, Lakers are up 2-1 in the series. I'm not going to say 3-0. They're up 2-1 in the series if Pau Gasol plays average basketball. Average. Not good. Average. That would be the most mystifying thing out of this series that just would have you shaking your head. Even when Gasol was with Memphis, he did not play like this during the postseason or even during the regular season. As bad as he looked at times in Memphis when he got, you know, had the term Paul Gasol. You know, even in the 2008 postseason when the Lakers made the finals and lost to the Celtics. Yeah, you know, he got pushed around by the Celtics. But it was until he got to the Celtics. Mavericks are not a physical team. No, they're not. They're not a physical team. They're a highly skilled team who has added toughness through, you know, Tyson Chandler and Jason Kidd. But they're not. I mean, Dallas is not going to scare anybody physically. They're not going to push anybody around. On the opposite end of the spectrum, give Dallas credit. Now, I'm not ready to toss a boatload of bouquets to Dallas because they still – listen, Dallas, you win this series, great. You beat the two-time defending champions. Go out there and win a championship. Go out there and win a championship because those memories and ghosts of 2006 will not be erased until they win an NBA championship. Now, in fact, it would be even worse if they got to the championship and lost again. But what Dallas has done is, you know, they have a great bench. Dirk Nowitzki has been the best player in this series. And they have quality big men in the paint that they did not have before. They have depth. They have a lot of depth. They're too deep at every position. Every position. So give Cuban and give their front office credit for, you know, because I thought, you know, after last year, Dallas, I was like, maybe they should trade Nowitzki because I thought they were completely done. Like, that, like, you're not winning with this team. I really did. I thought that they wouldn't be a contender with this team. Jason Kidd, you know, 155 years old. It doesn't matter because you have Jason Terry and J.J. Barea, and you have so much depth that you can hide Jason Kidd. And Jason Kidd has played well, to be honest with you, to be 150 years old. He's played very well. So Dallas now, you know, it is not official, but it basically is official. Dallas now becomes the team to beat in the Western Conference. I don't know who the team to beat in the NBA is. With the Lakers being basically out of the mix, it has now become just wide open, to be honest with you. It's become wide open. But definitely in the Western Conference, the Dallas Mavericks are the favorites now to get to the NBA Finals, and that certainly was not the case going into the season, or even going to these playoffs. Here's what Phil Jackson's thoughts on last night's game.
Again, as in game number one, they finished a little better than we did in the difference in the ball game. We got to the foul line. Second half, we didn't. Made some threes in the fourth quarter. We didn't. They finished better and we didn't deserve to win.
That about sums it up. I mean, for all, you know, the funny thing about that little, you know, 20-second rant, if you want to call it that little 20-second piece there was no philosophizing there. You know, there was no zen. There was no, you know, things that he was like, what is he talking about? It was clear cut. Everything was clear. When Phil is angry and when Phil is, you know, really annoyed, there's no philosophizing. He'll just come out and say, you know what, we're not playing well. Or, you know what, you know, Andrew's got to get tougher. So, I mean, not, I mean, he will come out and just say something like, look, we're just not doing this. I mean, did you see when he hit Paul Gasol in the chest? That was, that was frustration that was cumulative. That was not just that particular game. That was something that had been building throughout the course of the season, ever since November, basically. After November, Paul Gasol has been, you know, just bad. Hasn't been any good. Has been average to bad. So that, you know, that wasn't just last night. And this will be Phil Jackson's last year, and, you know, he won't get his fourth three-peat. Oh, we should all feel sorry for Phil Jackson. He'll only have 11 championships on his mantle. 347-215-6180 is your call number. You can also hit me up at facebook.com/Cyrille Quinn or follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Again, 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, sad news in the world of golf. We'll discuss that as we head towards our Saturday morning headlines. This is the Saturday morning wake-up call. Almost did it again. Almost said the Cyrille Quinn review. But this is the Saturday morning wake-up call, 16 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Minutes after 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call, Saturday morning Cyrille Quinn, taking you till 12:30 as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Seve Ballesteros, five-time major championship winner, is dead at the age of 54. Ballesteros suffered for the last three years from a brain tumor. His condition last night really got bad before he passed away late last night. This guy, again, five-time major winner, was the first European to ever win the Masters and was one of the most creative golfers that the sport has ever seen. I mean, if you think that Phil Mickelson look like conservative Charlie in terms of some of the shots that he attempted on a golf course. I mean, it was like there were golfers who said that he would attempt shots that they wouldn't even think about. Ballesteros is credited with really bringing golf to really expanding and taking golf from a European perspective to another level. Again, I mentioned that he was the first European golfer to win a Masters. You know, Sergio Garcia, Jose Maria Otabo, all those guys revere and love him. They Rafael Nadal in tennis. I know he is, you know, again, one of the most beloved athletes in Europe. And again, age 54, he had the brain tumor suffered back in 2008, had retired in 2007 due to some back issues. he certainly will be missed. Five times major championship winner, Seve Ballesteros. The Chicago Bulls take a 2-1 lead over the Atlanta Hawks, 99-82. It was the Derrick Rose show. Derrick Rose goes out there and silences any critics about his ankle. 44 points, 7 assists, dominated the game from start to finish, had 17 in the first quarter, never looked back. And, you know, Atlanta, you know, the fact that Atlanta won a playoff game in the second round was enough. Atlanta will not win another game in this series. Chicago clearly is the better team. Thought that game one was a wake-up call for Chicago. But I do not expect them to lose another game in this series. Again, when Derrick Rose is – when he has it tuned in like that, there's pretty much nothing that you can do. Chicago does need some more – need other guys to step up if they want to, you know, get to the finals. Derrick Rose, you know, you can't count Derrick Rose for 35 to 40 a night. But last night he was spectacular in, you know, 17 of 27, 44.7 assists, becomes, I believe, the third youngest player ever to score 40 points in a playoff game. No, maybe the second youngest. I think Magic Johnson was the youngest at the age of 20. So he was absolutely dominant last night. In the NHL, you had the Boston Bruins finishing off the Philadelphia Flyers 3-1. They sweep the Flyers and really take care of business that they could not do last year. As you remember, Boston was up 3-0 last year and was not able to and it would allow the Flyers to get back to win the series and to win 4 straight games last year and shock the Bruins. That was not going to happen this year. Bruins are playing well. Detroit avoids elimination as they take out San Jose 4-1. They're still down 3-1 in their best-of-7 series. Still to come, we will go loco and talk about some Washington, D.C. news as college basketball loses a legend and another collapse for the Washington Capitals. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. 24 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to go to a new segment geared towards my D.C., Maryland, Virginia audience. We're going loco here. Gary Williams, of course, this past Thursday retired as the head coach of the Maryland Terrapins. Williams had been with the team for 22, have been coaching for Maryland 22 years, 43 years overall he had been coaching. He retires as the third winningest coach in ACC history, trailing only the legends Dean Smith and Mike Krzyzewski. And it was time, to be honest with you. They really hadn't had a championship or Final Four caliber team since. They won a championship back in 2002. Had a couple good years where they won 25 games. Last year, had a very good year, lost a heartbreaking game in the second round to Michigan State, who eventually, of course, Michigan State would go on to make it to the Final Four back in 2010. But, you know, if you can't, college basketball, especially with this one-and-done situation, with the way the game, the way things are now, if you cannot recruit top-notch players, then you don't have a chance. And somewhere along the way, now Gary Williams never got the caliber player that Mike Krzyzewski, Dean Smith, Roy Williams, Jim Calhoun, he never got those kind of players year in and year out. But what he would get is he would get maybe one or two of those guys and a bunch of other, you know, rough and tumble guys sprinkled in that fit, you know, what, you know, fit his system, that that embodied his personality, and they would, you know, and they would go long, they would go a long way in the NCAA tournament. Remember, from 94 to 2002, Maryland lived in the Sweet 16. They were in the Final Four a couple of years. They won a championship. They were a legit top 10 program during that 9-year period. And they would go toe-to-toe with Duke or North Carolina. But, you know, after 2002, he just was not getting the talent that was required to compete with those particular teams. And the thing about it is the ACC, you would figure it would be easy for him to win games considering that, you know, the ACC in the past 4, 5, 6 years has completely fallen off. This is not the ACC when you used to have obviously Duke, North Carolina, Duke, but you said Clemson, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, Virginia, all those teams are very good teams 8, 9, 10 years ago. The ACC used to constantly send 5, 6, 7 teams in the NCAA tournament. That has not been the case, again, in the last 5 to 10 years. So, I mean, I think Gary Williams knew that, hey, you know, this, that, you know, my run is over here. Maybe he hasn't had the energy to go out there and go crazy as far as recruiting. I know he wasn't getting along with the athletic director now, who's with North Carolina State now. I know that was an issue for, you know, a couple years ago. But she, again, she's with NC State. But again, how he ended and how bad, you know, in these last 4 or 5 years certainly takes nothing, doesn't take anything away from what he's done for this program. Remember, he left Ohio State. A lot of people are saying, you know, that's a lateral move. You're going from Ohio State with all the resources that you can have to Maryland because it's your alma mater. Took over a Maryland team that was, you know, on probation. The program was basically at ground zero when he took it over. The program was bad. He, you know, it took him 4 or 5 years to get it right, but when he got it right, he got it rolling. Again, starting really in 1994 and having almost a decade run where Maryland was a legit top 10 program. You know, he knocks off 7 number one teams during his tenure, with the last one coming, I believe, against North Carolina in 2009. That grit when, you know, Grievous Vasquez had a triple-double and they upset North Carolina team that was eventually going to win a national championship. In one of the more exciting games in recent Maryland history. So it would be very interesting to see who replaces him. Also, there has been talk about Jay Wright, Mike Bray, just some of the names. Sean Miller, who I can't see Sean Miller leaving Arizona. Maryland is not a better job than Arizona. It's not. I mean, Sean Miller, you know, Arizona could be, you know, they could be in the Final Four next year. So I don't see Sean Miller leaving Arizona to come to Maryland. You know, you'll hear some other coaches be mentioned as time moves forward. They'll certainly want to make a decision quick for recruiting purposes. So you should hear something within the next couple of weeks on who the next coach of the Maryland Terrapins will be. Not a good week in the district. The Washington Capitals were knocked out this past week by the Tampa Bay Lightning in a sweep. And to me, this sweep is absolutely inexcusable for the Washington Capitals organization. The Washington Capitals, 2 years ago, lost Game 7 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Okay, no problem. Pittsburgh went on to win a Stanley Cup. You know, you're losing to Sidney Crosby, who I consider the best player in the world. Seven-game classic series, it happens. Last year, you started to see some warning signs of maybe they have some serious postseason issues because they lose to a number eight. They lose to a number eight seed, Montreal, after blowing a 3-1 lead. Lose game seven at home. But the difference is Montreal was hot at the time. You know, they ran into the hot goaltender with Kelly Price. Camilleri was playing great. So even that, you say, hey, we've seen eight seeds take out one seed before. You know, 2011 will be their year. Well, this year, they get a gift not dealing with the Penguins, no Sidney Crosby, no Evan Malkin. I understand Tampa Bay is talented, but there's no way in the world that the Tampa Bay Lightning should have beat the Washington Capitals in a sweep. And to me, it is time for the Capitals, this team, to change their identity as a hockey team. This pretty does not win in hockey. You know, these offensively gifted teams, now you have to, one, settle in on a goaltender, and two, they're gonna have to get some thugs on their team. They got too many guys who all they worry about is their stats. Who just care about scoring. Too many of those guys. They have enough offensive weapons to get rid of some of those guys and get some defensive studs. They don't have enough goons on their team. They don't, like, when you're facing the Washington Capitals, what guy intimidates you from a defensive perspective? We know about Ovechkin. We know about Sidney. We know about those guys. But from a defensive perspective, what guy scares you? Who? Who scares you? You know, Boston has that big, giant Chara who's about 7 feet tall. He's about 6'8", 6'9". But the guy, I mean, he's an intimidating force. I mean, New Jersey back in the day had a couple of guys. I mean, he had Scott Stevens, had Claude Lemieux. They need some thugs on their team, pure and simple. And they don't have that right now. And Bruce Boudreau, I mean, maybe Bruce Boudreau maybe he's not the guy. I mean, his postseason record does not have a good postseason record. Maybe they ought to look into another head coach. Because this is back-to-back years of losing as a number one seed when you basically had no business losing to Montreal last year. None. And to me, this is even worse with losing to Tampa Bay. Is your call number. When we return, we will get into some baseball, talk about last night's action. Andre Ethier still hitting. What are the Yankees going to do about Derek Jeter? We'll talk about that and much, much more as we on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Excuse me. Oh boy, some of the things that you see. I'm watching SportsCenter here, and of course they're doing Lakers Mavericks basically. And is it time to panic in LA? Is one of the questions. And what do you think? I mean, time to panic in a question mark. Yeah, I think that down 3 games is nothing. That would qualify as it being a time to panic. Down 3 games is nothing. Oh boy, this is gonna be a long, long playoffs off season to watch. I'm just a fan right now. I'm gonna have to go back. I haven't been here since 2007. Remember, the Lakers have been in the finals every year for the last 3 years. They haven't been eliminated this early, or won't be eliminated this early, going back to the Phoenix series in 2007 when they got put out the first round. So this is uncharted territory for me recently as a Laker fan. I'm used to seasons ending in June, not before Mother's Day or on Mother's Day. 37 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, 347-215-6180 is your call number. The Saturday morning wake-up call poll question is, with the Lakers basically unofficially eliminated, who now is the favorite to win the NBA championship? I really think that you have to look at, I would say, 4 teams. I would say Chicago, Miami, Dallas, and Oklahoma City. Let me take Oklahoma City out of Memphis. I can't disrespect Memphis like that because Memphis, that series is tied at 1. I would say 3 teams, Chicago, Miami, and Dallas. I would say those 3 teams you have to look at as 3 teams who could possibly win the NBA championship with the Lakers being virtually out of the mix all of a sudden. Let me make this clear. There are some happy teams in the Eastern Conference right now that the Lakers are basically done. I guarantee you that nobody in the Eastern Conference wants to see the Lakers in the NBA Finals. There are some happy teams. Last night in baseball, of course, some late scores. Anaheim, the Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim got by Cleveland 2-1. San Francisco got a walk-off single by Freddie Sanchez to complete their comeback win against Colorado 4-3. Yankees over Texas, snapping a 4-1, snapping a 3-game losing streak. Detroit gets by Toronto 7-4. The Dodgers double up the Mets 6-3. Andre Ether continues his streak, is now at 30. Minnesota crushes Boston 9-2. Boston drops his 30 straight game. And Atlanta shuts out Philadelphia 5-0. A pitching dominated game, to say the least. Cliff Lee, despite the loss, struck out 16 batters. And now, on the season, has fallen to 2-3. He's really had some tough luck. They're not scoring any runs for Cliff Lee. I mean, I believe this is the second time that he's lost a game by virtue of a shutout. On the other end of the spectrum, he was outpitched by Derek Lowe, who carried a no-hitter going to the seventh inning. Derek Lowe ended up giving up 2 hits. There have been a lot of, you had a no-hitter by Francisco Liriano earlier this week. But there have been a ton of near no-hitters early on in this baseball season, as we're basically, roughly 6 or 7 weeks into the season. So, again, it's like similar to last year, it has clearly been the year of the pitcher again within the baseball season. A couple things I want to get to as far as the baseball goes. Number one, and you saw this was coming, especially if you're a New York Yankee fan, Derek Jeter is under the gun. Jeter right now has no RBIs, batting around 250. And again, Yankees cannot do anything. I mean, they can occasionally give him a day off, but you have nobody to. It's not like you have somebody that can spare him too much time off. I mean, Yankees are stuck with Derek Jeter. Not only playing shortstop, but the only thing you can do is drop him in the order. And I think if you're Joe Girardi, I don't think you wait on dropping him in the order. I think you say, hey, Derek, we're going to drop you to sixth or seventh in that order, and just keep it simple. I mean, will you like it? No, but your job as an individual Girardi is to win games. And right now, Derek Jeter batting second, batting leadoff, batting. He should not. I mean, you look at that lineup. That lineup, Derek Jeter is probably the eighth best hitter in that lineup right now. I mean, you have A-Rod, Teixeira, Granderson, Robinson Cano. So if you're Joe Girardi, you have to drop him in that lineup. Like, do it right now. Don't wait. Don't wait until – it's only going to get worse. Listen, he's not going to get any younger. I think right now Girardi is hoping that Jeter has a hot streak where he breaks out of a slump and gives him the excuse to keep him batting where he's batting at the top of the lineup where he's at. I wouldn't wait that long if I'm Girardi. If I'm Girardi, I pull the trigger right now and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. Now, if he goes out there and hits 400 in the month of May and earns his way back up to the top of the lineup, then fine. Then you get the best of both worlds. You're getting him in the seventh spot, sixth or seventh spot, and you're getting him, hit the ball, hit the cover off the ball. But there's been no indication that that's going to happen, and I don't think you can wait this long because it's going to get worse as far as the media. People are going to say the questions are going to continue to get asked day in, day out. It's going to be tough on Jeter. You drop him seventh, and then the questions be like, did the questions go away? Also, in baseball, there's been an epidemic of guys, of DUIs. Six players have faced DUI charges since the season started. You have Derek Lowe, Adam Kennedy, Coco Crisp, Miguel Cabrera, Shin Soo Chu. And, baseball, and none of those guys have missed one game, which tells you one thing and one thing only of how powerful the Players Association is. The fact that you don't have anything in the CBA that merits a suspension. If a guy gets, pulled over for a DUI, so I've... that should have been in the collective bargaining agreement a long time ago. Now baseball wants to put that in, they have discussions on that being in the next CBA, and that's fine. It should be in the next CBA, but it should have already been there. I mean, you had a guy in Nick Aidenhart who 2 years ago lost his life because of a drunk driver. Also, trade rumors are floating about within the Mets with Jose Reyes. Jose Reyes, who has played well this season, has been rumored to be going, the Giants have an interest in him. It's only a matter of time because the Mets are going to have a terrible season. And with the exception of David Wright, Beltran, Reyes, anybody, I would feel on that team in terms of their lineup can be moved. I would not move David Wright, but anybody else, it could be open season on. When we return, we will come back with another edition of Are You Kidding Me? That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Thank you. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn. And here we go with another edition of...
Are you kidding me?
Rashad Mendenhall. Very interesting week for him. Mendenhall, of course, made the comments about Bin Laden and 9/11. If you don't, if you didn't hear what he exactly tweeted, here it is. We'll never know what really happened. I just have a hard time believing a plane could take down a take a skyscraper down demolition style. Okay. First of all, and I'll say this. If you are a professional sports organization of one of the major, four major sports, there needs to be a stipulation in these guys' contract that you just about Twitter, Facebook, that you just can't make comments over Twitter and Facebook. I mean, there needs to be something during the season, or even off season at all. That you just something, because there's too much, especially with Twitter. It's not even so much Facebook. Twitter, these guys go Twitter crazy. Especially in the football, especially with the football now, we're in the midst of a lockout. They don't have anything to do. Rashad Mendenhall, I mean, I don't know, Rashad. Did you not see the? Did you not see a plane crash into the two buildings and take it down? Was it an optical illusion? I thought that's what hundreds of millions of people saw on television on September 11th, 2011. So from that standpoint, what he said makes no sense. And also, the second thing is, when you have a situation where you have NBA playoff games, now, you know, get fans have to, you know, go through metal detectors to get to the games, and you have a national anthem. You have the people just before playoff games, and you have people televised. You have stations televising the national anthem before a playoff game. That should tell you that, you know, maybe you want to keep your comments to yourself. Maybe you want to keep your comments within your own household. And of course, he does, you know, classic backtracking. I mean, which he had no choice but to do. You know, what would the common sense coordinator say to this? Probably like, Rashad, just don't say anything. Don't say anything. Don't mention anything about, say, you know, say God bless America. God bless America. God bless our troops. Say that. That's it. That's what you say. Anything else, say nothing. Don't say anything. We live in an ultra sensitive society. As is a politically correct, Rashad Mendenhall just put his. Yeah, Rashad Mendenhall just, you know, completely put his foot in his mouth, and again, there's no, when you say something like that, there's no backtracking. I mean, you can apologize once you say it. That's it. You can apologize to try to save some face, but for the most part, what's been said has been said. And of course, he lost his one and only apparel deal with Champion, who immediately dropped him from their line of clothing and sporting apparel. It's mine right now. We'll see what happens. That is what Jimmy Clausen told the Charlotte Observer when talking about, when speaking about Cam Newton and his jersey number. Jimmy, let me inform you of something. First of all, that statement was...
Are you kidding me?
Jimmy, your time in Charlotte, your time with the... with the Carolina Panthers, as short as it was, is over. Okay, you were drafted in 2010, and they come back in 2011 with another quarterback as the number one pick in the draft. If they tell you, hey, Cam Newton is number two, then Cam Newton is going to wear his jersey number two. There's not going to be any negotiation. Like, normally in situations, guys pay for numbers and couple hundred thousand, NBA, maybe some guys might play for it, what have you. No. That would not be the case for this situation. They simply tell Jimmy Clausen, look, Cam Newton is number two on our, will be wearing jersey number two. We're not even going to go through, whose number is it. If I was Jimmy Clausen, I'd be like, look, just give up the number. Just give up the number. Why fight it? You are no longer, you never were the face of a franchise. But now, you are a memory as far as the Carolina Panthers goes. Don Manley came out and said that when it's said and done, that Derek Jeter will go down as the greatest Yankee of all time.
Are you kidding me?
So Don, I guess that means that Derek Jeter will be considered the greatest player of all time because it's universally regarded that Babe Ruth, who last time I checked played for the Yankees long time ago, is considered to be the greatest baseball player of all time. So if Jeter is the greatest Yankee of all time, then he got to be considered the greatest baseball player of all time. Listen, I know that Jeter has had a great career. He's a surefire Hall of Famer, but let's not get crazy. I mean, you're talking about a franchise that's featured Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, Yogi Berra, which Jeter is better than. Jeter's not better than any of those players I just mentioned. It's not even a discussion or a debate. Now, you want to say top 10 Yankees of all time? Absolutely. I would say, listen, outside of those five guys that I just mentioned, I would put Jeter number six on that list. Top six, top half dozen, without question. The greatest Yankee ever? Come on, Don. Did you watch the Yankees? Did you know anything about the history of the Yankees? Greatest Yankee ever? Jeter wouldn't even call himself the greatest Yankee ever. There's nobody who's watched baseball, who's watched New York Yankee baseball, would even think about making a statement like that. But, when somebody puts a microphone in front of your face, 10 people tend to get emotional, want to defend you, they want to defend their friends or defend, I can't rationalize what Manley was thinking when he made that statement. I really can't. I mean, he didn't even play with the guy. Not again, I mean, he was the bench coach. He was with the coaching staff on some years under Joe Torre when Jeter was there. But greatest Yankee of all time, I don't think so. So there you go with another edition of Are You Kidding Me? When we return, we will have on Alex Brown, who is coming shortly. We'll also talk a little bit about this fight, this Pacquiao Shane Mosley fight. So we'll talk about that when we return on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.
You
58 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Of course, later on tonight, you will have the cap off will be a tremendous sports day in general. And you have the NBA, and going on as well. You'll have in the Kentucky Derby, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. You will have two fighters who are, I don't want to say going in opposite directions, but who are polar opposites as far as where they're at in their careers. Manny Pacquiao is pound for pound the best fighter in the world, going against Sugar Shane Mosley. Mosley, who's 39 years old, has somewhat of a rebirth in his career. He did destroy Carlos Mayorga not too long ago. And speaking, we'll get to that later as our buddy Alex Brown has joined us.
How are you?
How you doing? Good afternoon, Alex. How you doing today?
All good, man. Everything's good. Over in Louisville, Kentucky, ready for the Kentucky Derby.
Alex, first we'll begin. I'll begin with Uncle Mo. What does Uncle Mo being out of this race? How does that affect this race in your mind?
Well, it puts the race wide open. Uncle Mo is a champion 2-year-old, and the horse that everybody had assumed was going to be the leading 3-year-old, also given how good he was as a 2-year-old, but things just haven't looked good for the horse this year, and it turns out that he's got some physical issues he's dealing with, and yesterday they made the decision to scratch the horse. So what it does to the race is just throws it wide open.
There's been a lot of talk, Alex, about how weak this field is. In all your years of covering the Derby and covering as well as Washington, is this the weakest field you've ever seen?
Well, you know, on paper it kind of looks weak right now, but you just don't really know till after the race is run. You could get 25-1 shot winning the race easy, becomes a huge champion. So, you know, a lot of people, and I would agree with them right now, say the race looks weak, but we can only really say that after the race is run. They're definitely, you know, these 3-year-old colts, it's first Saturday in May. There could be a couple in here that are really on the upswing and could show us that they're actually really good race horses. But right now, I would agree with them.
How about the track, Alex? This track, from what I understand, that the weather would not be an issue. Who does this track kind of favor as far as their style, in terms of how they like, in terms of how the horse likes to run?
Right. I mean, I don't know, to be honest. Right now, it is starting to rain. Let me just go check. I mean,
it is raining.
For rain this afternoon. I mean, it was a beautiful day here at Churchill Downs this morning. But I think if this rain kicks in, it'll be another, you know, muddy racetrack, and that's going to change the complexion of the race entirely if that does happen. And who does that suit? You know, the live long shot like Animal Kingdom. They're not going to be afraid of a sloppy racetrack. But, you know, I kind of hope the rain backs off. I'd love to see this race run on a fast racetrack and, you know, see a truly run race, but we'll see.
Okay, our buddy Nick Zito, who always, you know, seems to have a prime contender here year in, year out, has the favorite dialed in. Talk about that horse. Talk about the jockey, and what are your thoughts on that particular this particular horse?
Well, I saw Dialed In this morning, and he looked, I thought, particularly good. He trained this morning. He's one of only a few Derby horses that trained, and he looked magnificent. I just hope for his sake that it's a fast racetrack. And he'll be a decent favorite, I think, at 4-5-1. Julian Laperoux is in the irons, one of my favorite jockeys for sure. So if Dialed In's good enough today, certainly Julian will be able to steer him into the winner's circle. But he does look very good at this point. But you know, it is a wide-open race. Even if he is favorite, he'll be a lukewarm favorite, not a heavy favorite, like Uncle Mo might have been if he'd have won the Wood Memorial and looked like he did as a two-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get to some other contenders here, but let's spend a minute on Uncle Mo. Uncle Mo was clearly the most polarizing and popular horse, talked about horse going into this race. From a skill standpoint, from a talent standpoint, where did you, you know, where was he as far as, you know, how good a horse was it from a, just from a pure talent? Did you like this horse?
I mean, I liked him. He was a Breeders' Cup juvenile champion, undefeated, won, you know, I don't know, started maybe four times, won a couple of grade ones last year. I would like to see him win a grade one this year before I call him, you know, a sublime champion like, you know, I think some of his connections are trying to do now. But certainly as a two-year-old, he was outstanding. That win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile was spectacular. He clearly was the standout at the end of last year. He is not the standout right now. He was beaten in the Wood Memorial for whatever reasons by Toby's Corner and another horse. And we're unfortunate that Toby's Corner had to withdraw from Derby consideration a couple of days ago too, because he did actually look like a legitimate shot from the Grey Motion barn. But yeah, Uncle Mo, it looks like he could have been a great racehorse, but he still needs to prove it in my book as a three-year-old.
How about, as we talk about the Kentucky Derby, of course, Kentucky Derby, folks, is coming up today around 6:24. Wide open race, as many people consider it to be a wide open race. Uncle Mo out, Toby's Corner out. There was another horse that got that withdrew too not too long ago. It was Pegasus. I'm trying to think of it. Started with a P that had the withdrawal, not like, I think last week. That also was one considered to be one of the contenders. So really, a kind of a watered down field. We'll see if another star emerges.
I mean,
what about? Oh, go ahead.
No, I say it's a bit of a watered down field, maybe. But you got some nice horses coming out of Louisiana from the winter. You know, you've got, I think, a live long shot in Pants on Fire under Rosie Napravnik. She won the Louisiana Derby, and he's going to be 20-25 to 1. So you got to like that. And I like the horse Shackleford, who was second to Dialed In the Florida Derby. Also, you're going to get a bit of a price on him, the Dale Romans horse. Steve Asmussen, I hung out with him a little bit this morning. He was in good, happy mood, hanging out with his father, Keith, and they have Nero in the race. Very likely race colt, but second in the Louisiana Derby and in the Arkansas Derby. And then the Arkansas Derby winner, Arch looks very nice, and lots of people are rooting for his connections. Jinx Fires, you know, 70-year-old, now has his first Derby starter. So, you know, it's going to be a wide-open race. That's what makes it a fun race today. Rather than it be a race that looks like it's going to be dominated by one or two horses, you're going to see a race where I think a lot of horses have a live shot today. So that's kind of fun. But, you know, we'll see. But I'm actually looking forward to seeing how it plays out. We'll have a Derby champion at the end of the day, and we'll have a horse going into the Preakness that could win the Triple Crown. We'll see.
How about Bob Baffert with Midnight Interlude? Certainly, we had, you know, when it comes to trainers, Bob Baffert, along with Dwayne Nicholas and Nick Zito, is certainly the holy trinity of trainers. How do you like that horse?
I mean, you know, Bob Baffert knows how to train a Derby winner. Midnight Interlude, lightly raced horse again, but just come off a spectacular win in the Santa Anita Derby, so that augurs well for him. He also won the Oaks yesterday. I was outside their barn this morning. They looked pretty happy and sort of relaxed with themselves. So, he's just one of the, I would say, half a dozen, eight or nine horses that really does have a legitimate shot if you look at their last couple of races. If you win a grade one in your last race, you're a legitimate Derby contender this year for sure, and Midnight Interlude is one of those horses.
There's an age-old question, Alex, going into this race, and it's always, you know, it's a very interesting debate when I hear it, when you're talking about rest versus rust. Would you rather have a horse that, you know, has ran a lot of races, that seem to build up their stamina, or would you rather have the horse that you know, may not be as worked and could be rusty. Which horse do you? Which, I mean, how do you go about running your horse going into this race?
Right. I mean, I don't think there's one absolute right answer. In the old days, they definitely preferred more seasoned horses coming into the Derby that had stronger campaigns as two-year-olds and three or four races under their belt as three-year-olds. Now it's much more fashionable to have a lightly raced horse, maybe only run two or three times this year and maybe two or three times last year. And certainly if you look at the past performances of the horses in the race today, most of them would be considered lightly raced horses. But, you know, that's the current fashion. I mean, obviously, I'm sort of biased to a horse like Barbaro, who run five starts before the Derby, but he'd won every start. So, I mean, he looked very legitimate going into his Derby 5 years ago. And there's certainly not a horse in this race today that has that kind of form and consistent form that stands out. But, yeah, you can go either way, to be honest. If you'd have said 20 years ago, how's it done, they'd have said the horse has to have at least 9 or 10 starts going into the Derby, all told. Now, that's definitely not the case.
So, with that said, in a race that is like that we all think is clearly wide open, how much can a jockey impact this race? Like, can a jockey be the difference?
A jockey can be the difference, but I mean, if we all think the race is wide open as we do, it also makes it quite difficult for a jockey to handicap the race because they're handicapping it just like we are, so they can figure out what position to take and what horses to look for. And that just is very difficult for those guys this year because, again, it is a wide-open race. It's not one or two horses that the jockeys need to concentrate on. There's probably 17 or 18 horses, 12 or 13 horses that actually have a legitimate shot. So that makes it more difficult for them. Now, you know, a lot of people have early bet the horse that Calvin Burrell's on because he's won three of the last four Derbies, but to be honest, you know, I think he is on one of the horses that has very little chance. So, you know, that kind of betting to me is a little odd. I don't think Calvin makes that much of a difference. He just, you know, apparently knows the shortest way around the circle is the inside fence. So that's his advantage. Maybe the other jockeys will start copying his route round Churchill. But, you know, a good jockey with experience and Derby experience is quite useful because it's the only time they've ever run against this number of horses and the only time these three-year-olds have gone a mile and a quarter to date. So getting an experienced jockey is helpful.
So you look at this field, give me the horse in your eyes, and you've seen all these horses. Give me the one horse who has the most, let's say, physical talent. You look at that horse and you're like, wow, that's just a physical specimen.
Right. I mean, I think that's a very difficult answer this year. Again, much like, you know, if you'd have asked me Barbaro's year, that would have been a very easy answer. Everybody was keying in on him training up for his Derby. He looked magnificent compared to the rest. And I'll just go back to Dialed In this morning. I got a chance to see him train. He looked great. He looked like a legitimate sort of favorite type horse. So, yeah, I mean, why not focus in on Dialed In? He did win the Florida Derby. So, yeah, from a physical specimen standpoint, he looked great this morning. He's one of the only a few that I saw this morning because most of the other horses didn't train, but he certainly looks well enough to win the race if he's good enough.
So who do you like to win the race?
Well, I actually have picked Shackleford, who was second to Dialed In the Florida Derby, in any sort of lists where I'm quoted as picking horses. But like I say, I could change my mind five times between now and the Derby. It's that wide open. If it does rain and rains considerably, then I think I would put a few bucks on Animal Kingdom as a lively long shot on a sloppy wet track. If it's a fast track, then yeah, Shackleford or maybe Dialed In would be my choice. But I mean, you're not going to make money following me because right now I think 12 or 13 horses have got a shot of winning this race.
Yeah, it's definitely a wide open field. You mentioned Barbaro. You, from what I understand, you have a book Yeah. Well, Barbaro, talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following Barbaro and working on some projects related to Barbaro now for, 4 or 5 years. And, you know, it's all basically manifested into a book, which I've now published, is available on Amazon.com, Greatness and Goodness, Barbaro and His Legacy. Early feedback on the book has just been outstanding. I'm floored at sort of how people have received the book. And it sort of documents his life, and it sort of analyzes his legacy and his sort of impact on our sport. I interviewed more than 120 people for the book. I knew Barbaro myself, so I have some first-hand accounts of my experiences with Barbaro. And the book was supported by his owners, the Chapsons. So it's a great opportunity for me. We'll see. It's the first book I've written and absolutely the last book I'll ever write. So this is it for me. We'll see. But it's available on Amazon.com. Would make a terrific Mother's Day gift. I'll just have to throw that out.
There you go. So give us, for our viewers, for our listeners who wouldn't know too much about Barbaro, give us some background information on Barbaro, what he accomplished.
He was an undefeated Kentucky Derby winner. His win in the Kentucky Derby was probably as good as any horse's win in the Kentucky Derby since Secretariat. He won by the largest winning margin for 50 years. He closed the final quarter faster than any horse in Secretariat. Edgar Prado, his jockey, never had to go to the stick to ask him for any extra run. He was simply spectacular. And as I said, he was undefeated going into the race. He'd also won easily on turf, on a sloppy racetrack, on a good racetrack. So it didn't matter what surface he ran on. Unfortunately, he broke down in the Preakness. They tried to save his life for 8 months at the New Bolton Center, and sadly he ended up with laminitis and was euthanized. But he sort of inspired a lot of people to do a lot of good things in his name, and still does. He's become a very inspirational figure, and you know, that's a piece of what I write about in the book, as well as a thorough explanation of his life. He was a great racehorse, and he's got a terrific legacy. And if nothing else, the statue, the memorial to him at Churchill Downs now, outside the Kentucky Derby Museum, will guarantee his legacy for future generations. In simple words, he was simply a great horse.
Now, had he not broken down, you know, in that Preakness, are you convinced that if that horse is healthy, that would have been a Triple Crown year?
Possibly. It would have been interesting. I would tell you that in the last 10 years, probably the two best three-year-olds that ran were Barbaro and Bernardini. And I've heard that from other people, too. Bernardini was the horse that won that Preakness. I would argue that Barbaro would have beaten Bernardini that day, simply because the only time Bernardini was beaten was when Invasor looked him in the eye in the Breeders' Cup Classic and pulled away from him. That wasn't the only time he was beaten, but the only time since the Preakness he was beaten. And I would say that Barbaro would have looked Bernardini in the eye at the head of the stretch at Pimlico, and his mental maturity, he'd have been able to put Bernardini away. But I think it would have been a close horse race, and if he had put him away, he would have won the Belmont for fun and been a Triple Crown winner, for sure. So he would have been a Triple Crown winner.
So you don't put the horse I'm trying to think of right now that almost won a Triple Crown, Big Brown. You don't put Big Brown up there with those particular horses?
No. I think Big Brown, lightly raced. He looked spectacular in the Derby. His Belmont sort of was a little bit ugly in terms of, you know, what happened to him getting pulled up or so forth, and then really didn't develop from there. But certainly his Derby was impressive in of itself. There was just something about the combination of factors that makes Barbaro's Derby that special, I think. But Big Brown was good. I mean, Smarty Jones just got beat in the Belmont. For the Triple Crown, there have been other horses that have been close to winning the Triple Crown.
But
the fact is, they were close to winning the Triple Crown and got beat. Barbaro, we don't know if he would have got beat. You know what I mean? That's kind of what makes it a bit different. We just don't know.
Yeah, that kind of adds to, you know, unfortunately, the incident of what, you know, him,
right,
the break with the leg. That's, but that does also add to the mystique of the horse, the fact that you never saw him get beat. I would
he
say
was
it's
never
obvious,
ever
course,
beaten. Yeah, never
so
beaten.
That would add to it.
Yes, it adds to the mystique, and he won his races so convincingly.
Talk about this horse. I had a chance to look at a piece that you wrote not too long ago. And, you know, people are wondering about where is the next superstar horse coming from. From what I understand, that you wrote a piece that there's a horse in Europe that is supposed to be this, you know, off-the-charts horse. Talk about that horse for a minute.
Yeah, right now in Europe, they have a horse called Frankel. He's a three-year-old. He just won the English version of the Triple Crown's first leg, the 1,000 Guineas. He's undefeated, much like Barbara, winning the first leg of the Triple Crown here. He also wins his races very easily. And many are saying that he is the best horse, the best three-year-old they've had for a very long time. He runs on the turf, which is more traditional in England, rather than the dirt surface that we have here in the States. But Frankel has been spectacular in each of his races so far. So there's definitely a lot of excitement over there for him. I don't know if we'll ever get to see Frankel run in the States, but he is definitely an upcoming absolute superstar. They love him over there, and if you get a chance to just watch his race on YouTube in the 1,000 Guineas, it's definitely a treat to watch.
So you like Shackleford to win, but you understand it is wide open.
Yes, I'll pick Shackleford. Pants on Fire is a bit of a longer shot, and Nero are my three. Nero, Steve Asmussen's horse. If it rains, then I'm throwing Animal Kingdom in there. So those would be the four horses that I'll throw out there.
Alex, as always, thanks for coming on, and we certainly we'll have you back on probably in a couple of weeks with Preakness.
That'd be great. Yeah, you can have me on any time you want. You know that, so I really appreciate it. And I'll always have an opinion on something.
All right, Alex. Well, good luck with the book, and enjoy the race today.
Great. Thanks a lot, mate. Good luck.
All right, take it easy.
Okay. All right, mate.
That, of course, is Alex Brown of The Rail. He writes for, of course, he does a bunch of stuff. He has his own website. You can find him on The Rail at the New York Times, along with the likes of Joe Drape, who does a wonderful job as well with the horse racing. And, it's going to be a wide-open race. I mean, you have two or three horses. You have two horses that were prime contenders, Toby's Corner and Uncle Mo, who are out of the race. The field is the field is not that strong to begin with. He has some decent horses. Maybe one of these horses emerges as a superstar. Who knows? But should be a wide open race today at Churchill Downs, which is one of the great sports sites in North America. How they seat 120,000 people and the way they do it is remarkable. And again, those last couple of minutes, when they come down the stretch, again, a couple of the most excited men in all the sports. So stay tuned for the Kentucky Derby today down at Churchill Downs. They'll be running at around 6:24 on NBC, so we'll see what happens with that. We'll be right back on this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call with some closing thoughts. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We'll be right back. 24 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, 347-215-6180. Busy sports day, NBA playoffs. Yeah, it's Kentucky Derby. You have some baseball. Pacquiao Mosley be shocked if Pacquiao didn't win that fight. Now, Mosley has never been knocked out. He can take a punch, but I can see a methodical beatdown by Manny Pacquiao. Pacquiao doesn't have to knock you out to hurt you. And, we'll see what happens with that as Mosley at 39 years old tries to do the unthinkable and take out the Pac-Man in their welterweight bout. With the beginning of the beginning of the end. Of course, we began the program with the Lakers Mavericks. The Mavericks taking a stranglehold of the series, going up 3-0. Lakers look like a tired team that, you know, has played in 76 playoff games in the last three plus seasons. Mavericks have dominated the fourth quarter, dominated from the bench standpoint, killed the Lakers from the three point line, and Dirk Nowitzki's been the best player on the floor. So you add all that up. And you have, and the fact that Paul Gasol has been a absolute no-show in this series, then you have a 3-0 deficit facing the two-time defending NBA champions. And listen, you know, this is what happens. I mean, I don't know. Are you surprised that it's 3-0? Yes, but when you look at history, you know, Detroit in 91 got swept by the Bulls. They had came off back-to-back championships. Houston in 96. Swept by Seattle Supersonics. They came off back-to-back championships. And the Lakers of the 80s with Magic and Kobe swept, and Kareem swept in 89 by the Pistons coming off back-to-back championships. So this is nothing that is just like, whoa, it's, you know, historic in that, but that's not, that it hasn't happened in NBA history before. This is a part of the NBA. The NBA, you know, teams that have championship pedigree, who have veterans on their team, they don't go down hard. They go down easily. You know, they mostly go down without a whimper. They get swept or they get beaten badly. The frustrating part about this series, if you're a Lakers fan, is the fact that Gasol has been, compared to what he has been the past previous three postseasons, has been awful. And, you know, this is a guy who is not old, who's, you know, 30 years old in the prime of his career. As a big man, he plays average basketball. This is a different series. So that would be the thing that would baffle you the most about this particular series. But give Dallas all the credit in the world. Dallas has made – they have been great in the fourth quarter. And ever since that game four, where they collapsed 2 weeks ago against the Portland Trail Blazers and blew that 23-point lead, that 18-point lead in the fourth quarter, they have become a different team, won 5 straight playoff games since that loss, and been rolling, you know, have been rolling, and find themselves now clearly the favorites to get to the NBA Finals, where I'm sure they might be even slight favorites to win the NBA Championship. Again, I don't think there is any clear-cut favorite to win the NBA Championship right now, with the Lakers being basically out of the mix. And you have Miami, you have Chicago, Dallas, you want to say to a lesser extent, Oklahoma City, Memphis. But I think that right now there are 3 teams that can win the NBA championship. Of course, tonight, this afternoon, you have Oklahoma City and Memphis in game 3 down in Memphis. Very interesting to see Oklahoma City try to win a road game where they can be down 2-1. Tonight, Miami and Boston are in Boston. See how much Boston has left. I think they'll win game 3. I don't think they'll win game 4. I think this series is a 5-game series. I think they'll win game 3, lose game 4, and Miami will wrap it up in game 5. So a quick review coming up on Monday at 8 p.m. We'll talk about the weekend in sports. We'll have some entertainment news as well, so stay tuned to that. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your Kentucky Derby, NBA playoffs. I'll see you on Monday. So long. We'll be right back.
I'm glad Ancient Noble is the last one. I'm really pissed.
Everywhere at once. Where you book matters. Expedia.